The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This week on Unboxed, I'm speaking to Dan Murray-Serta, a very seasoned entrepreneur who's invested in over 70 startups and has founded a number of businesses, some failures, some huge successes. And one of those successes is the business Heights, which is booming at the minute. Heights is all about providing supplements for people to support their gut and their mental health and general well-being.
There's no point in having lifespan without health span. Our whole thing at Heights is we want to add life to your years and years to your life. You have bacteria in your gut that are essentially defining even things like your thoughts. Our product has 380 clinical studies on the 7 strains of bacteria.
I am personally fascinated about the gut and about the link between nutrition and mental health. It's something which we don't talk about enough, and I think for entrepreneurs and people who are in business and trying to make things happen in this digital world, looking after ourselves often comes second. And that's why I wanted to get Dan on today to talk about why we should be prioritizing our well-being and just how important and that link is between how we feed ourselves and look after ourselves nutritionally and our mental health and well-being. Let's get into it with Dan. Well, Dan, thank you so much for coming on Unboxed.
Mate, it's my pleasure.
So, as I said to you before, I feel like this is overdue. I feel like I know you without having ever met you before. But for those who don't know you, who are you, what do you do, and what drives you every day?
Deep, mate.
Let's go deep and let's start.
Who am I? It's like the identity crisis straight off. Well, I start with dad now, because I feel like that's the strongest part of my identity, where I'm a total learner, right? So life is about experience and gathering experience. And even though I'm 10 years older than you, you've got more experience than me as a dad. So I like to lead with my vulnerability, and like I'm an inexperienced dad with his training wheels on. But I'm a 5-times entrepreneur, meaning I've started 5 businesses. One of them went well, one of them failed, 3 of them are still going.
Dad of 6 then.
Dad of 6, yeah, exactly. I am also an angel investor. So one of the awesome things I've learned about being an entrepreneur is you can't start everything, but if you love ideas and you love creativity and you love passionate people, you'll just gravitate towards them. So I've been on a personal mission to help give confidence to other people. Like, I remember what it was like when I was first raising. Like, I've raised millions and millions of pounds now, and the first 25k anyone ever gave to me was, it still sticks in my memory, right? It's just the confidence that someone else says to you, I believe in you, go and do it. And I am addicted to that feeling of trying to help other people when I meet them, which is bad for my wallet and my responsibility for my family, but it is something that I've really enjoyed and really lent into.
Yeah, I mean, that's seasoned. 5-times entrepreneur. You've, as you say, you've had wins, losses, you've raised millions of pounds. How would you actually define being an entrepreneur? Like, what does it actually mean to you daily?
Yeah, so it's interesting because my dad ran a business for 50 years and he would never call himself an entrepreneur. He's just like, you run a business, stop making a big deal out of it. And one of my favorite George W. Bush quotes, it's only one because I don't have that many quotes from him. My boy.
Yeah.
He was like, the French have no word for entrepreneur.
That's pretty good.
One of my faves, because he was being completely sincere. But ultimately, an entrepreneur is someone who creates value. So someone who is able to create a product, a business, a service, monetize it, create profit, create jobs, create opportunities. That's the way I see it. And I think modern day entrepreneurship, you know, the category has blown up and been so wide. And I think one area where I really gravitate to your podcast and the way that you think about things is, especially in the UK, I think we've been really slow to adapt to the idea of like a creator business is a business. A creator is an entrepreneur of their own sorts, right? Their own type. I think the USA, as always, has been way ahead of the game in terms of accepting that narrative. And I think, as always, British skepticism and cynicism has actually held us back to that reality.
I can agree more.
And there are so many, it's fascinating because there are actually, you know, in the olden days of creator, before like social media, you know, there's Gordon Ramsay and Jamie Oliver and, like, you know, Joe Wicks. There are people with enormous, like Delia Smith. Of course, a lot of these are chefs.
Yeah.
But you see it happen. They're like global brands worth millions and millions of pounds. Yet we still kind of have this weird attitude towards whether that creator is really an entrepreneur. And you're like, fucking yes. They employ people. They have profit margins. You know, they're running a business.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the big sort of pivots I was saying to you before this as well that I've realized in my head around this show and this concept, which is that creators need to not be, I think, pigeonholed into content creators, influencers, and into this weird bucket, when in reality you're talking about self-starting entrepreneurs who have built their careers from scratch, from nothing, often most of the time, who've managed to capitalize on their personality to build brands around themselves, to now be in a position where they're hiring teams, they've got their own payroll. That is exceptionally impressive. Like, there are many creators out there who are built, who, you know, have eight-figure, nine-figure businesses now, and it shouldn't be put, I think, in this sort of creator economy influencer bubble in my head. And that's why with Unboxing, with this whole show, I'm looking to make it slightly more broader around modern entrepreneurship because of exactly that.
Yeah. I think there's a like a good case to say that it's all the same. And actually, you know, someone like me, so if I focus on one of my businesses, Heights, right? If I think about Heights, the product, so supplements for brain and gut, right? And the job is to build a brand, right? And then to make the best products.
Yep.
And so, like, every day the focus is on that. And the narrative storytelling around it is ultimately about how looking after your brain and gut will make you a much better person. It will help you live longer. It'll help you feel better today. We talk about, you know, having better todays and more tomorrows. So that's like the purpose and why we do stuff. And so you craft this whole narrative and understanding about why you're doing what you do and creating the operations around it. On the flip side, you know, a different business that I run called Kindling Media, we make podcasts, and I'm the host of Secret Leaders, which is one of the top entrepreneurship shows in the UK and Europe, right? So much like you, I do less of the talking, more of the asking. But in that one, like, technically I'm the product, right? My personal brand there is the product, my ability to ask difficult questions to successful entrepreneurs, my ability to get like now 70 unicorn founders onto a show, make the time and basically give them a hard time and ask them what it's actually like to make money and to lose it quite often and all of those bits in between. Technically, the product there is me. And so I do actually have an understanding of what it's like when the creator is the product that they're trying to scale versus creating a product that you're trying to scale.
Yeah. And then now we're in the era where creators are trying to do both, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to both be the personal brand, like the Sidemen, everything we're doing, whilst also building IP and brand. So I want to go into your...
Well, and then you get into the problem of how hard it is. So the challenge is that a lot of creators will have huge egos unless they do a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right? Or they're naturally disposed to being amazingly deep. But no one could blame anyone for getting a really big ego for having a big audience. You'd literally need a coach and good people around you to keep you in check and make sure that you're like still you. And it's just naturally what would happen. So no judgment.
Mm.
But then you're like, so I can do anything because I have a big audience. And then you realize that these things are really hard. So you look at the example of Mr. Beast Burgers. It's not him that's done anything wrong. And Jimmy's obviously a super nice guy, right? With a good heart and all of this stuff. And probably, if anything, has very, very decent ego as well, considering how big he is. But you go into business with the wrong partner, or you rush things because you can, or it doesn't quite work. This shit's not that easy.
100%. And I think we felt that firsthand ourselves. We've launched a number of businesses. And I think the reality that you are not an expert in everything just because you have an audience. I think people confusing audience and expertise and business acumen just by having a big audience. Of course, creators have a huge amount of acumen to build up their own platform and their distribution, but that cannot be conflated necessarily, of course, with being an expert in business, which is why the team is everything. The people you partner with is everything. Our big ethos with everything we're doing with the Sidemen is know where we are great and world-class, which is in marketing and distribution, where we're not, and we should act like we know nothing and work with partners who know everything, is around product operations and the business development side of things. And that's where we've been very fortunate to have partners who've kind of come on that journey on all the brands. Because I think if we tried to do it ourselves, or I think in Jimmy's case with Beast Burger, obviously for us, besides similar challenges around ghost kitchens, he partnered with Virtual Dining Concepts, which is a scaled ghost kitchen business. So you're kind of caught in the business model that's very hard to come out of, which is, I think, where he found himself, unfortunately.
But let's use that example versus KSI and Prime, right? So every ghost kitchen. Just imagine what's going on there, right? So every single time a human being is there cooking a burger. So some will be good, some will be shit. And yep. at the top end, like, they're all amazing, but there's just a huge inconsistency. And what you don't want as a brand is inconsistency. So when I think about Heights, right, we go to the nth degree to make the perfect product. And then, you know, our probiotic, for example, we spent 3 years before, that took 3 years to bring to market because we did all the scientific testing research. So when we can come out, we can literally prove it's the best one in the market. But we can prove with the evidence that it's the best one in the market. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, there's no point in making it. That's our view. And the reason it took 3 years isn't because it took 3 years, it's because, you know, it took 6 months, but then it wasn't the best. So you have to make another version. And this stuff takes time because you have to literally test it in labs and in stomachs and then test the poo.
Yeah.
The reality.
Yeah.
So you then think about something like Prime. Well, it's just an energy drink, you could argue, right? But the point is, once you've understood the job, the audience, most importantly, and the formula required, plus the margins needed, that is a repeatable, consistent, guaranteed formula. Prime will taste the same in London as it will taste like in Jakarta, as it will taste like in Rio de Janeiro. You're not going to mess it up. It's one flavor, one type of thing. You understand how to do it. And so I understand that as well, making products, right? You aim to make the best, and then you have a really consistent way of repeating that. And that's how you create a brand.
Yep.
A brand is ultimately the narrative, the story that other people say about what you do. And that needs to be consistent.
It's about trust, really, isn't it?
It's about trust, but it's about a story that other people are telling, like, their friends. That's ultimately what your brand is. And so, you know, this burger is the best burger ever versus this burger was all right is an inconsistent brand story.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah. And we've experienced that with Sides, which is our fried chicken brand. We had a split between ghost kitchens, which dominated, to then realizing the same problem, inconsistency. And then we had to pivot and very quickly move into brick and mortar. And we launched our restaurant in Wembley, which changed everything for us because it gave us the gold standard. And we always said at the time, having physical was the biggest blessing because it was the gold standard that everyone could refer to. For example, when you're, to your point on what people say, if you have Nando's, let's say, on Deliveroo, you're going to go, it was all right, but not like Nando's down the road.
100%.
But at least you've got Nando's down the road. If your whole brand is on Deliveroo, you have no comparison, you have no gold standard. So it's very hard to shape the story that people tell others. Whereas now we're pivoting entirely into physical and brick and mortar because of that exact reason, that we need the consistency and people love the product so much. So when they go to Wembley and then when they go to Gravity and now all of the physicals that are coming, got 10 launching this year, you can make sure that they are at the best and they show off the product in the best way.
Right, and you will hire the people and train them and go there and, like, you know, mystery shop and turn up and, like, you know, they'll know that they got to keep that level super high.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Heights.
Yes.
So, because one of the big things that, you know, coming into this, I'm really fascinated about. I mean, there's so much about you that I'm absolutely in awe of. But one of the big things is around me as a new entrepreneur, I guess, coming into this space. I'm 26 years old, founded a number of brands, I've worked at a number of companies and so on. But I'm kind of new in this journey. You're incredibly seasoned and you've done a lot within the last 15 years.
Well, 10 years. 26 as well.
26, there we go.
Yeah.
In the last
good
10
age.
Years.
Good vintage.
That's a good age. Yeah. There we go. So one thing that I'm really keen to learn from you is around optimization. How do I hack and engineer my body and my physical self to be the best it can be? Because that's something which you have just been pioneering, I think, in the UK.
My first throwaway comment is, you know, don't have any more fucking kids, mate. you're not going to be at your optimized self with those midnight calls or 3 a.m. ones. Look, I actually, you know, I started off as a digital entrepreneur. So I was in tech. And I was running a company that was doing super well. We were one of the fastest growing companies in the UK. We were invited to every private dinner and Buckingham Palace and, like, all of these things and these awards. And we won awards and, like, all this stuff. And it was wonderful and amazing and exciting. But my heart wasn't in it and I didn't love it. The company ended up failing. And
what does failure mean in that sense?
Very simply, you know, our costs exceeded what we had in the bank account. And it was a wholly stupid reality, but we were scaling at, you know, something like 30,000 new users per week. So, like, an exceptional growth rate that was like that, like you're meant to have, of people who were shopping on our app and basically spending money and giving us lots of revenue. But our job was, we were essentially aggregating products from other brands and making an amazing mobile experience. And we would get a commission on sale. And in reality, we never really figured out all of the ops stuff for like hyperscaling, and we hyperscaled and got to a point where suddenly like tens of thousands of people are missing items and returning items.
Stress.
And yeah, and we just didn't have the money in the bank account to actually account for the fact of having a million people doing like all the stuff at the same time. We just went completely bust. So lots of lessons learned, hugely stressful. And you know, people lost money, and it like has a lot of shame and a lot of embarrassment, because you're a darling one day and the next you're actually a fuck up. So I learned a lot from the experience, but in between that and Heights, I had like personal mental health issues. So I've always had like mental health issues that I've spoken about quite openly, because I think, you know, some people are lucky enough to never have them. But quite a lot of people that haven't ever had them just haven't had them yet, because it's a human experience. And it is quite possible that stuff that happens to you or the way that you live your lifestyle will cause some kind of mental issue at some point, because you have a brain. We all don't think about our brain, out of sight, out of mind. We're not giving it much conscious thought. Correct. So, you know, you see that we maybe put on weight, or, you know, we're not looking so good, and we'll wear makeup and do hair and like, you know, brush our teeth because they're decaying, and see all of this stuff and go to the gym, but you just don't think about your brain. But it is like obviously your most impactful organ, hands down. And so I had that kind of reality where I ended up, you know, I often say, as an entrepreneur, and you might appreciate this as well, your job is actually to predict the future. So your job is, you're saying, okay, what's coming up in the next 3 to 6 months? You're the guy with a plan.
It's a critical path. Right. How do I get, I'm here, I want to get to there, how do I do it?
Right. And so you have to have an idea. And so you're thinking about the future. While ruminating about the future is exactly what anxiety is. So I always say to entrepreneurs, you know, like, you know, I get anxiety, what do I do about it? I'm like, pick a different career. Like, it's a bedfellow for entrepreneurship. It doesn't mean every entrepreneur has anxiety. It just means to be more sympathetic with yourself if you do, because you're literally spending your time thinking about the future all the time. It's going to cause anxiety. So I was very comfortable with anxiety, but I started to have chronic anxiety. And I ended up basically one night not sleeping, and then the next night not sleeping, and out of nowhere. So I think what's important to share is, at that time, I was happy in my life. So I was with a woman I was going to get married to, who's still my wife. Sounds like she's not.
Yeah, we got
married. And I was happy. Like, my failure, like, you know, was behind me, and I was doing new things, and I was in a good place mentally. But I suddenly just couldn't sleep. And that went on for 2 nights, 3 nights. And then after 6 months, I was still full-blown insomniac. And basically what happens is your whole energy cycle is completely switched. So, you know, I basically start work at like, you know, 2 a.m. because I was like full of energy. And then by 8 a.m. when it's time to go to work, I'm like drained. And then you're like really energetic again at 10. So, you know, a lot of insomniacs, you know, you do sleep, but you can't sleep properly.
Right.
So that was
always disrupted.
And it was always at 2 a.m. Annoyingly. And you start to get anxious, you know, just before you're going to bed, because you know it's about to repeat again. Anyway, I went to the doctor. He gave me sleeping pills and antidepressants. And I was like, I don't want to take those because I don't know that I need those things. Like, who's to say that I am depressed? And I don't know. Anyway, after 6 months of trying a lot of things, and I tried, you know, a sleep therapist, a therapist, calm, meditation, CBT, so cognitive behavioral therapy, a whole bunch of things. Nothing worked. And I went for dinner with a friend, and she was like, have you heard of brain nutrition? And I was like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. She's like, well, you should go see a dietitian. And I was like, what is a dietitian? Never heard of one. She was like, you know, it's a doctor, but they specialize in nutrition. And I was like a nutritionist? And she's like, no, literally, like, medical doctor, but for nutrition. And I was like, wow. Feel like,
since when?
I feel like I know stuff. I feel like I'm into my health in general. I booked to see one through the NHS. Go see her. She's like, yeah. And I described the stuff to her. Like, in fairness, it's not like she's immediately like, boom, says to everyone. But she was like, it sounds to me like you are depleting these nutrients. These are the supplements that you need. And so she was like, take omega-3, B vitamin complex, and blueberry extract, and go get them from either these links on Amazon or Whole Foods or Planet Organic. Don't get them from Boots. Don't get them from Holland & Barrett. And I was like, why? And she's like, basically, the quantities you need them in are so high, so potent, they don't sell them at the price point that is in Boots and Holland & Barrett.
That's you the just MGs can't, you see right on the side,
So you can't get that. You need to go get the expensive versions. And I'm like, right, okay. Massive skeptic, because I'm English. So I was like, you know, I don't take supplements. And so I kind of can't imagine that this is going to help, but whatever. I was desperate. Followed her advice, went to Planet Organic, bought these three supplements. You know, it's worth saying why she said that. So she's like, omega-3 is because your brain is 90% fat. 60% of that fat is one compound, which is DHA omega-3. That is found, by the way, in fish. And fish get it from algae. So what's super interesting about DHA is almost any omnivore, like a non-vegetarian, will naturally get DHA from fish in their diet. Yep. But fish do not naturally synthesize it at all. So in nature, no fish is born synthesizing DHA. That's just what they eat from their algae. So if you want to get actually the sustainable source, you go cut out the middleman, middle fish, and go straight to algae.
The algae, yeah.
Yeah, so the more potent supplements of DHA, but they're more expensive, are algae. So anyway, that's what she recommended to me. Then she's like, B vitamin complex, because that's all about energy. And your energy is all over the place, right? You're waking up at 2 a.m. and it's not working. And then blueberry extract, because she's like, that's a really powerful antioxidant.
Yeah.
And so what that does is she's like, it's going to be like a car wash for your brain. It cleans the lymphatic system of your brain. It's like, I don't know what that means. Just like car wash. Like, thank you for the analogy.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I'll just follow your instructions. Yeah. So went home, did that. 2 days later, sleeping. I used to say sleeping
two
like
days
a baby,
later.
But you know, that makes no sense.
Yeah, yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Now that I know that's
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, sleeping through the night. First night, like in 6 months, I woke up at 7. So I call her and I'm like, I can't believe this. This is absolutely amazing. You know, you've changed my life. Thank you so much. And she's just like, I just can't believe it's taken 6 months for someone to recommend nutrition to you. She's like, think about your brain. It's essentially an organ. It's two things, right? You've got your mind, which is all psychological, but the brain itself is an organ. It's a physical organ, like all the other organs. So it needs feeding. And this isn't like opinion. This is just science. It's common sense once you hear it. So she's very much like, the thing you need to understand is you've got your physiological side and you've got your psychological side. And you focused entirely on your psychological side. And what's sad is I could have gone on this entire journey and someone would have said to me, you know, take these supplements to begin with. And I would have avoided the pain of 6 months of like waiting for it to be the last thing. And she said that's very common for her. Yeah. She said mental health, especially insomnia, depression, anxiety, but like lesser stuff as well, you know, just like bad mood, etc.
Yeah, yeah,
she's like, you know, a lot of these things are nutrition based. And she's like, a lot of it you can get in your whole food diets. You don't need supplements. You don't need potent supplements. You can have a better diet. But most people are busy.
Yeah.
Most people
but
don't
they don't
have
know
the
about this
diet.
Stuff. They don't know. Dude, they don't even know that this is
no,
even, as you
they
say,
don't know.
It's the same thing. It's like,
they don't know.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
They don't know, A, but B, life happens. So perfect example, I know all this stuff and I know how important nutrition is and I haven't had lunch yet because I was going to be late for you and I had a meeting and it just wasn't going to happen. And it's like, and that's someone who literally knows all this stuff, know that I'm currently having a conversation with you years into my journey, knowing the importance of nutrition, completely suboptimal. That's just life. Some days are busy.
Yeah. But you need to know the framework and actually understand that there's an impact. And to your point as well, right, I think the amount, I mean, I've had a personal crash course in all of this randomly, and obviously we'll get back into the heights generally on the tangent it too much, but my mum recently in the last 2 and a bit years, because of experience with her mum who has diabetes, and her learning that so many elements of her diabetes and her condition can be treated and supported by obviously a good diet, and how much diet impacts physically without us really realizing. So she qualified as a nutritional therapist and has gone through that whole journey. So she's just been bombarding with, you know, supplements and recommendations, everything, and teaching me a whole lot. And one thing that happened relatively recently was I was on Roaccutane, which was like an acne treatment, which I was on for a period of time, had blood tests. I'd never done blood tests before, really. So I had blood tests and I did it for a couple of months. And on the second sort of step when I'd done it, we looked at the blood test. So looked into it, and she sent it to a nutritional doctor, so a nutrition-based doctor who recommended to me, and obviously there are so many different recommendations out there, but she said to me that, you know, various different things, your body, really low vitamin D and a few other things, I should get on, in her opinion, the PK diet, and specifically looking at keto is one thing, as well as these various supplements, things like garlic supplements, vitamin D, B complex, all of those as well, a lot of them which my mom had been giving me before, magnesium and so on. And the craziest thing, right, so I have always had a funny-ish relationship with the feeling of food. I always found food made me feel slow. I mean, my brain feel like it wasn't running at optimum speeds. I just I didn't enjoy the process of eating during the day for that reason.
So you're fasting.
Well, so I switched to this diet, and I loved fasting before. I found fasting was like the best because I'd always be running at like top speeds. And I was like, yeah, this is amazing. But then I jumped on keto to try it based on these blood tests. Obviously, it sounds like such a common thing now, but I jumped on this PK diet to sort of see how it would go. And in 2 days, I never felt better in my entire life from food. And what I realized at that moment was that the food being no carbs, no sugar, no dairy, for me in that case, wiped out all of the bad feelings that I would ever get from food. So I realized very quickly was, hold on a minute, it's not so much food that's the problem, which I felt and sensed before, because I can never feel good from food. It's the type of food, and it's the what you're putting into your system. So it just highlighted that to me, and it's now been a few weeks and I'm loving it. I'm flying. I've never felt better in my life from a slight tweak. And it makes sense when you think about it. No carbs, refined carbs, no sugar,
no
dairy. It's like, obviously, but actually when you put it into practice, changes everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's a couple of things here. One is, you're like, oh, it sounds so obvious nowadays, whatever. Well, not really, because you went and got blood tests. You had something, you felt in your body. And you're like, I'm paying attention. Something's not right. I'll do something about it. That leads you to, happens to be keto. Keto could have not worked for you. You'd have tried something else. The point is, you did the work. You want to feel good.
Yeah. I took the advice, ultimately. Yeah.
You want to feel good. You found the thing that works for you. It happens to be that. That's great. And that's the other thing. Like, I think a lot of people expect to feel okay or subpar. And they're very, and I used to be this guy as well, you know, feeling subpar, but then, you know, really cynical to other people's suggestions or supplements. They don't work. And it's like, well, how do you feel every day? You're like, you should feel good. You should feel good. Your sleep should be good. You should wake up with energy. Obviously, new parents, there is an excuse there. But aside from that group, like, you should generally be doing that. And so, you know, my whole philosophy is more is more. And it's not actually about, you know, for example, when we talk about nutrition and diets, I don't personally believe in the narrative of you shouldn't eat this and you shouldn't eat that and don't do this and don't do that, because it just shames people. And there's a lot of psychology and guilt that's wrapped up in that. So you make someone
feel... food's very complex, isn't it? In terms of its relationship to
and emotional
habits and emotions.
Yeah, and you make someone feel bad about the chocolate bar, like that's, maybe they'll eat two. So it's not necessarily going to help. So the thing is, if you're going to eat the chocolate bar, that's okay. But you want to make sure in your daily diet that you're also having food that includes the B vitamins, the vitamin D, the antioxidants. And if you're not, have supplements, right? So make sure that you are optimizing for the things that are guaranteed 100% according to health to help you be healthy, and then stop giving people a really hard time about the bad things as well. So that's like my approach. You know, I had the whole, you know, I used to be vegan, and I had the same argument like with vegans, other vegans, which was like, stop trying to make everyone vegan. That's never going to work. It's like an extreme choice, just like keto is extreme. Most people do not have the willpower or the desire. Stop forcing people to be extreme. Encourage people to eat a bit less meat. If the whole world ate a bit less meat, way more would be accomplished than everyone, like, well, then the like unlikely reality that everyone goes vegan. It's never going to happen. So it's for me about trying to find, like, what is the actual goal? And if the actual goal is to try and encourage people to be healthier, then it shouldn't be as much about telling people all the things they're doing wrong. It should be trying to help show them the things that are right and how easy it is to incorporate the things that they that are right into their lifestyle as well.
Can agree more.
It'll have more of a positive impact on people.
But also, people's situations are so unique. And that's where, through learning, through my mum's learning and through seeing all the books and everything else and reading some of it just out of curiosity, you know, it's so individual. So you can say, yeah, well, this might work for you. But actually, you know, other people have very different stories trying the same thing. So it's more, how do you live? What's your lifestyle? And how can this naturally, how can good nutrition and good health choices sort of fit naturally into your lifestyle in a way that doesn't also, you know, bring more stress, more anxiety, more sort of obstacles in your way of actually living a good life? Because that is going to be subjective and different for different people, you know.
Your brain is the CEO of your body, right? So fundamentally, if you're not taking care of your brain, if you're not taking care of your health, like, what makes you think that you're making the right decisions? What makes you think that you're optimizing everything you're doing? You know, life is all about inputs, and then the output is a complete function of that, right? If you spend all of your time, energy, money eating junk food and crap, the idea that you'll have like amazing thoughts and the right energy to get through the day and actually the right level of thinking doesn't compute, right? So to me, I personally believe that like everything starts at the top, right? Everything starts from, and I think increasingly we're really understanding this message in general in society, which is fantastic. And also like the younger we skew, like generationally, the more we understand that we are what we eat and therefore taking this stuff seriously is really important. But, you know, the making sure that you're getting the right inputs every single day are going to dramatically improve your outputs. And so for me, I think a lot about stuff in terms of energy, productivity, and sleep. And that all starts from how I'm feeding my brain and gut. The brain and gut, because they're interlinked. So the vagus nerve is the largest nerve in the body. It's a communication highway between your gut and your brain. And actually, you know, all those things like gut instinct, et cetera, your gut understands what to do before your brain does. So whenever you've had like a feeling that I should do this, by the time it hits your brain, you start thinking about it, you usually talk yourself out of the thing that you thought instinctively
was the
right
thing. So
gut
instinct is a real thing.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. And the communication highway, it runs both ways. But actually, you know, there's some crazy, crazy fun facts. But, you know, why bacteria, for example, why probiotics? So you are more bacteria than you are human cell. So you're, which is a very hard concept to understand, but you literally, you have bacteria in your gut that are essentially defining even things like your thoughts. So serotonin is made, serotonin being, you know, like the
happy hormone.
Happy,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Happy hormone. It's made in your brain, but it's also made in your gut. And so, you know, a good example of where we're different as well with heights, our product has 380 clinical studies on the 7 strains of bacteria. And those bacteria, one of them is specifically designed for the gut-brain axis, which is the vagus nerve is also called the gut-brain axis. And it's specifically proven in clinical research to improve and create, help generate serotonin, right? Which obviously helps mood. So the science of probiotics is super fascinating because you can essentially isolate the bacteria types in your gut that are responsible for certain jobs like helping you with immunity, helping you with mental health, helping you with digestion, helping you with better skin, whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
So you can actually target, you can take targeted probiotics that focus on the outcomes you're trying to get to. And focusing on health outcomes via nutrition is, to me, just as sensible as going to the gym, having a good social network, 100%. Like making sure that you are turning up in society and doing things that you know, that make you happy. These are conscious choices. And I think one of the things that is inspiring to see in society, you know, coming back to what I talked about earlier in terms of like, this is the minimum amount versus the optimal amount. I think more and more people are taking health into their own hands. You know, they're saying, okay, well, I want to live a long life and I want to live a good life. So there's no point in having lifespan without health span, right? Mm-hmm. You know, our whole thing at Heights is we want to add life to your years and years to your life. So we need to think consciously about how do our products help
you.
That's
a great tagline, by the way.
Thank you.
Was that years old?
Yes,
of course. Very good, very good.
but, you know, we want to think about, you know, linking that back to better todays and more tomorrows. Mm. So we understand that, like, unless you have a better today, you don't actually want to think about having more tomorrows. If today's terrible, you don't really think about, I want a long life. Mm. But if today's good and you're feeling good today, you do think about how you want more of them and how you want to reach your heights. Investing in your health is a lifelong journey. One of the reasons we're a subscription product, literally, is because we're not here for the short-termers, yeah. Right? People that want a quick fix, they take 5 to 10 years to learn that there was never any quick fix after all. You've got to do the work. And your health is not to be messed with, right? It is like the number one pillar that everything falls under.
You know what I think is so interesting, right? So when you were talking about your own experience with insomnia, doctors traditional, not to bash clinical doctors,
yep.
But they prescribe you with sleeping pills, mm-hmm. antidepressants, medicine, which actually has a negative impact on your
yep.
gut.
Yep.
Ironically.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're feeding often for a short-term fix. You're feeding your body with things which will actually cause long-term damage, but also will slow down your ability to solve the root issue, which often,
yes.
as you've been saying, and as I've definitely found from what I've understood from my mum and everything else, which often starts in your gut.
Yep.
And there's a phrase as well that nutrition therapy, which is your gut, is your second brain.
Yes.
And people don't treat it like that. And actually, we totally ignore it, which is a big thing that I can't get my head around now that I understand it. It's almost like, wow, I've woken up to the reality that there is actually nothing more important from a physical perspective than serving your gut well and looking yes. after your gut. And if you don't do that, the rest is almost irrelevant in a way. You have to get that domino first.
Yeah, it's interesting. The more I've learned about the gut, the more I would argue that's true. You know, the more I, you know, I used to say, well, your brain's your most important organ, so you've got to actually optimize that. But it's actually all of this learning about the gut being the second brain and how integral it is. You're completely right. If your gut microbiome, which is the environment there, if it isn't looked after, if it isn't taken care of, you're going to have so many health issues that you and you might not even be consciously aware of them. Because I think what you've just referred to is really astute, which is when you're offered antidepressants or sleeping pills, I've always said to people, like, I think that that is a solution. And I think there might be 10 solutions, just for argument's sake. Mm. There might be, you might have something wrong with you, and there might be 10 solutions on the table that you should consider. And one of them that will work and is right for you will be antidepressants and sleeping pills, for sure. Like, I know plenty of people, including my own mother, who, like, require them, and they really are the right thing for them. The problem is the way that the system is set up in the NHS, the GPs that will give them and administer this, they don't have time to really diagnose you. They don't have time to understand you and your problems properly. And that's a quick fix solution that we become addicted to.
But they might also not be nutritionally trained as well.
No, they're
right?
definitely because not nutritionally trained.
They, that's also
and I'm
niche.
Sure your mum has pointed this out, but like doctors get 7 hours of nutrition and 7 years of training. Right. So they don't know. And that's not to criticize them. They're not trained. So they don't know.
It's not part of the curriculum per se.
Correct. Yeah, it's not part of the curriculum. And therefore, it's not taught that nutrition is how to heal someone's problem, which is exactly why, you know, a lot of people like myself go through an experience like I did with insomnia. And I had to go and seek my own insight outside of the traditional healthcare system. See friends, read books, listen to podcasts, and learn more about my health to understand that actually where I needed to go after all was nutrition, right? That was a journey. And one of the things I love to do and I love to try and spread the gospel for is not to say to people, everyone needs supplements, is to say, you should be paying attention to what are your goals in life? How do you want to feel? What do you want to do about it, right? And what are the choices you're going to make? And sometimes that'll lead you to ask more questions than just, you know, the quick and easy prescribed route. You know, pharmaceuticals have saved millions of lives and do a great job in society. The problem that we've got to is that they are now a catch-all for everything. And that's not right. You've just pointed out the numbness, right? If you're not able to, like, listen to the pain of what your body's telling you. The reason I got insomnia, you know, someone said this to me and I found it so astute, was your brain's telling you there's a problem. So it's not letting you sleep. Yeah. And you need to go and solve that problem or you won't sleep again. And, you know, it carried on until I found the problem and then I started sleeping. And so the thing is, you know, because we're so busy and we've kind of accepted that modern busy life equals pain, struggle, suboptimal feeling crap, that we don't have time to listen to whether that feels right or wrong. Yeah. So to me, the modern day health opportunity and the modern day like thing that excites me about people with lifestyle is if you feel crap, you listen to yourself and say, I want to get better. And if you feel good, you don't go, cool, well, that's done then. I'll never feel bad again. It's like, no, I want to stay feeling good. And so I'm going to like continue to optimize my health. It's to me a common sense modern day principle. And healthcare systems have not caught up to it at all. We're still focused on how to heal the sick. But
we people put plasters like you and, on, but we don't dig to the real cause.
Totally. But you people like you and me don't want to think about like healing sick. We want to think about like, okay, staying healthy and being as healthy as we can.
But also to, you know, the feeling of, as we were saying, about being optimized and reaching our own heights. I think as business owners, as entrepreneurs, as people who are trying to make things happen and are constantly generative, we need to be, all for me, I hate nothing more than feeling like I'm not at that 100%, which is why fasting has become such a powerful tool for me.
And I see it
almost as a
tool.
Because it cleanses every element of my brain, my body, to the point where I feel not only alive in a way that I never knew before I started fasting more regularly, but also from just a business perspective, I'm 100 and a parenting perspective, I'm 100 times more effective than ever. And again, these things people don't really have the knowledge of even trying. I mean, you speak about fasting and often people cringe and they go, why, like, that's insane. But actually, in reality, you know, small things like that, which people have known for thousands of years, are transformative. Also, like, as we've said, looking after your gut, which actually goes back a long way. But in our culture today, which is feeding people a lot of junk, it's very difficult to see the wood through the trees and to actually get this information. Also, I do think personally that so much money is made through treating the sick, through medications, through Big Pharma and all these other sort of slightly more pernicious elements of the industry, that there is a not saying there's a need to keep people sick, but a lot of in our culture is creating sickness. It's not about making people actually better. And I think a lot of people would lose a lot of money if people were truly healed.
Well, and also there's a really interesting thing with supplements in general, which is why they've kind of been able to exist in this kind of like murky space with bad practices and low dosages and all of that stuff, where it's not that interesting to pharmaceutical companies because you can't patent anything that comes from nature. And supplements, you know, vitamin D, B vitamins, omega-3s, this is all natural. Everything comes from nature. Mm. So they cannot be, they're not in, you know, there's no patent.
Yep.
So there's no real business opportunity for a pharma, a pharma company. So they don't make it onto the agenda. So they don't make it into the education space for doctors. So, and when you're sick, you go to a doctor. You don't think, I'm going to go to a nutritionist. I'm going to go to a dietitian. So the problem is the funnel of where you go when you feel stuff, and that they ignore nutrition and they ignore supplements. And they actually, in the UK especially, you know, put them down and like, oh, they don't work. And it's like, the bad ones don't work. That's true. But that's why there is space for modern day brands who understand that actually it's all about quality. It's all about potency. It's all about being able to prove this stuff through investing in the research. In America, they're so much more, again, ahead of the game with their attitude towards it. And the attitude is really interesting. The reason why more Americans care about supplementation, for example, and health optimization is because it's
expensive.
Yes, it's too expensive to get sick.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, you've got this modern day idea of like what an American looks like and stuff, but fundamentally, they, like the ones that are consciously aware of it, you know,
are very conscious.
Very conscious because it's too expensive to get sick. And in the NHS, it's free to get sick. And obviously you'll be in pain, but it's still free to get sick. There's a safety net.
But you, and you wonder about the cost. And you wonder when you talk, you listen to, you know, the weekly, monthly, yearly, you know, challenges the NHS faces around costs and around rising obesity rates and everything else. And you just wonder if there was more focus on gut health, if there was a greater focus on supplementation, if there was a greater focus on nutrition, how much money would be saved, how many resources would be spared, the amount of money, the vast majority of money in the NHS gets spent on bad health.
One solution to obesity, genuinely. And, you know, and that also comes down to discipline, right? So, I mean, yeah, the state of health stuff is atrocious to me. One of my best friends has been in hospital for 6 months in UCH. And when I go to visit him, I'm always, my mind is blown. Everything is a Coca-Cola vending machine, chocolate bars here and there. The food that they give him whilst he's recovering from major surgery is an abomination.
My wife gave birth twice in UCH. Not to be recommended. From that sense of things, the food, all those things. How is that helping people get healthy?
And that's the thing. It's not. And it's like there's just no connection between nutrition and recovery. Doesn't make any sense. But the system is the system. So again, I encourage people, and I'm lucky, right? Because like my audience of people that listen to me and stuff are fellow business owners, and fellow business owners are people and creators. They are people with a disposition for change, right? Mentally, it's people who have like a I can attitude and I can change attitude and a growth mindset in general, who are interested in taking agency for things like their health. The problem is that's like 1% of the population at best, let's just say. So the 99% that sort of get more stuck into being busy, having money stresses, and then finding comfort and ease from the things that are around them, the things that are around them are terrible. They're full of sugar, they're full of fat, they're just low quality nutrition. And it just permeates everything, right? And so that's kind of the problem, is we need like a big change in terms of how people think about what they eat and how they optimize what goes into their body is going to translate for clearer thoughts, a longer life.
100%. Right. I want to get into this box.
Yeah.
Hit me. Right. So in here are a set of cards.
Yep.
I want you to open the cards.
Yep.
And we'll go through each one.
Yep.
And I want you to tell me what comes to mind.
Oh, this is fun. Right. This too shall pass. So I've always thought this too shall pass is a great concept, especially, you know, I'm an emotional person. And I've been on a journey, as everyone is, you know, of self-awareness, self-discovery. Like I really instill a very strong feedback culture at Heights, where I ask everyone to just tell me to shut the fuck up, or, you know, what have I done wrong today? Am I being annoying? Like, you know, people just tell me directly. And it really, really helps keep me in check. And the this too shall pass, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, things can be very up and things can be very down. And, you know, when my company failed, this too shall pass. When I'm at Buckingham Palace, this too shall pass. And it just reminds your ego, which we talked about earlier, that you're not the center of the universe. these are just moments that are happening to you. You're barely even significant. Keep everything in check. Move on.
I think that for me, all of that, I couldn't agree more with. And I think the principle of detachment is something which we don't often talk about, but it's so important, I think, for entrepreneurs to have a passion and a drive, but ultimately a detachment from the accidental moments and the fleetingness of what happens to you, because ultimately we're not in control. And the more we have that detachment, the healthier our relationship with business and with life, because we're not so defined by those moments.
Yes, spot on. Okay, next. All right.
Talk about Buckingham Palace. There we go.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that, mate. Those are the first ever bottles of Heights. This was 2 months before we launched. So these were our original bottles before those bottles even existed, because they were still being made. And it was just this very surreal day where I was invited to the House of Lords and I was invited there to Buckingham Palace. And I was like, this is, you know, all part of life's weird journey, right? Where are the amazing places that you can essentially, this is the great thing about having a physical product, where are these great surprising environments that you can actually penetrate with tenacity, right? Like, I've had a big thing around serendipity in my life. I think, you know, one of my greatest assets and forcing functions is this concept of serendipity. But serendipity doesn't just happen to you. You've got to make it happen. You've got to get out of the building. You've got to go and do shit, right? And then you'll find a load of serendipitous moments happen to you. So for me, like, you know, I wanted to go and get these products into the House of Lords and into Buckingham Palace, because you have no idea once it's in those doors who's going to see it and who they're going to intro you to. The point is, you just got to get out and make it happen.
Putting you in the right places.
Exactly. Exactly. And look, 9 times out of 10, nothing comes from them. But the 1 time out of 10 it does, you don't feel silly about the other 9.
100%. I'm always also a big believer in that, and the principle of, like, say yes to the meeting.
Totally.
Because you never know. Some of the weirdest and most brilliant opportunities that have ever happened to me personally and are happening to us at Arcade and the Sidemen, everything else now that we're sort of experiencing, is because of random meetings where you just meet someone and they, or somebody hits you up on LinkedIn and says, oh, do you want to have a call? And you say,
well, you've got to be careful with those.
Well, some of those, yeah. I mean, you have some vetting, right? Yeah, but the ones that look relatively interesting, or the emails that you get that go, you know what, I'll give this a go. Mm. And sometimes the best things come from them.
Yeah.
Next.
All right, let's have a look. Oh, yeah, I love it. Oh, it's my fave. So if you're depressed, you're living in the past. If you're anxious, you're living in the future. If you're at peace, you are living in the moment. From Lao Tzu.
It's very good.
It's so good, isn't
that
it?
That changed my... I remember reading that and getting into a lot of this stuff. Obviously, it could be in a whole other podcast, but about 3 or 4 years ago, and really understanding that, that changed my whole perspective on everything. Almost immediately, once that clicked in my mind, I felt 100 times more peaceful.
It's insanely poetic, isn't it? And to think there's so much wisdom packed into such a small bit of text.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. And when you when I remember reading that and thinking, hang on, and you go through all the moments which you've ever been anxious and all the moments you've ever felt down and depressed, and you pair them up and you go, yeah, it's either the past or the future, one or the other. So the only time or the only place that you can have true peace is in the present. It's one of those things that you think, if more people heard that and really dwelt and reflected on that, how much more peace people would find.
Yeah, but the problem is, honestly, like, most people are stuck in a state where they are the victim. And I get it, I've been the victim too, but once your mindset is still stuck in victimhood of the things that happen to you and why you can't change because of them, you won't be able to break free from it. So sometimes the right quote will hit you at the right time in your life and it will change everything.
Or the right book. I found that before in my life, where I've had books that sit on the shelf for years, and then you realise one day you get the inspiration to go and pick it up and it's actually exactly what you need at that moment.
So The Power of Now, I read 15 years ago and I thought it was the biggest load of garbage I've ever, ever read. And I can see how I thought that, because it's the weirdest book ever.
Yeah.
And then I read it like 5 years ago and it changed my life.
So the one book that comes to mind is exactly the same for me. I was sat on the shelf.
And you can see how it's garbage. Even now, knowing it's the best thing, because it's just not, there's no narrative. You're just like, it's just words,
and
mate.
And even for me now, I think my, again, this is a whole other podcast, but my, I guess my values, my spiritual disposition, everything else has sort of evolved slightly from that. So I don't overly look at that now and go, yeah, that's bang on. But at the time for me, it was the perfect domino, which lifted me into a completely different state, where actually I remember reading that book one after feeling a lot of anxiety about all sorts of stuff and overthinking, which has been a perennial problem for me. And I remember reading it over one morning, and I hadn't read a book, actually, interestingly, for a number of years. I've been just too distracted with the, you know, the joys of youth and partying, going out and everything else. I read that book in one morning, first time I'd read, actually, in a long time. And I read probably about half of it very, very quickly. And I remember there was a practice in that book where he talks about stillness and almost
controlling the thoughts that come into your mind and almost visualizing them moving away from your mind. So a thought comes in when you have voices in your head, which I had for a long time and I don't anymore, partly because of this book, I'd say, comes into your mind, you push it away and you push it away and you control it until you get stillness. And actually that stillness then changed everything for me, because I remember then being like, wow, I'm not distracted in my head anymore. And I went outside the house and I could see the trees and the color of the trees, and they were green. I was like, I've never noticed how green the trees were. Big and time. The sky looked vibrant, and everything changed because I'd decided to submit to the fact that I didn't want to be anxious and deal with that anymore. And as you say, come out of the kind of victimhood moment, but also I turned to actually practices that could help with that. And it did. So,
I mean, so have you read New Earth?
Yes, I went through a phase of reading like,
I love A New Earth. Yeah. A New Earth kind of makes The Power of Now feel like one chapter.
Yeah,
you know, like the depth of wisdom of the guy.
Yeah,
and he's a genius.
There's a lot in there. Again, I would say like, and it's maybe it would be an interesting conversation going a bit deeper into where how that was the first domino, but where I'm at personally with everything now is very different actually. However, it was so important for me at that time because it did just knock it all into motion.
Look, life, you know, you think about most things, you can't really like overstate how unimportant most things in life are. Like when you think back when you're 90, you're not going to remember most things, right? Mm. So we have a tendency to make a big deal out of everything, but most things you ever do in your life are not important. Yeah. So only a few moments matter. And quite often there can be a book, a quote or a person that utterly changes your life. And it doesn't mean that in 10 years, you're still going to be the person that reflected on that book in that moment and you're still the same, but it was an agent for change.
Yeah.
And I know being present to that is so important.
100%. And not looking at things in, again, too much of an emotional way where you, that's complete rubbish. It's like, well, no, I don't necessarily agree with all of that right now, but that was the domino which set my whole interior life in motion. And without that, I wouldn't be nearly as peaceful as I am now. So
it's interesting because my journey with religion is I don't have a religion, but I am spiritual. Well, as in the thing about being Jewish, which is weird, is it's a race and a religion. So I can't racially not be Jewish, but religiously I'm nothing, but I am spiritual. And the reason for that is because I believe that religion is all about teaching principles that are really important, but it's become super divisive. So Muslims and Jews and Christians, you know, they're all arguing about the same thing, which are like basically how to love thy neighbor and be a good soul. And for me, I learned far more from like just rejecting the statement, the sort of label of a religion, and saying I'm on a spiritual journey. And, you know, it's going to sound so twatty, but, you know, like you learn from trees and learn from like looking at nature and feeling what it's like to feel air on me or rain on me or whatever it might be. That to me, like living a human experience and feeling like sort of part of the universe in that sense, makes you want to be a better human, kinder, more thoughtful to other people, which are just the things that religion's trying to teach you anyway. You know, I don't identify as religiously Jewish at all, but I'm spiritual.
Yeah. Separate, this is for another time, but my personal journey in a sort of similar way was I was deeply atheistic, which I never grew up with any religion around me at all. Like completely against religion, hated it. All the Richard Dawkins books and Sam Harris and Steven Pinker and all these people were like really in my kind of 14 to maybe 16, 17 year old stage. And I actually, through the domino of The Power of Now, which is why it sort of took me on a whole nother journey, I ended up converting very like deeply and almost being completely swept under my rug, literally knock off the horse on the road to Emmaus, or the road to Damascus, sorry, vibe, and going headlong into traditional Catholicism.
Really?
And finding everything.
And you are now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And your wife?
No. Because we weren't when we married. So I was complete, again, up to about, I converted in about 2020 was the start.
So and it
was
a build up of all different things. Eckhart Tolle is definitely Christian. He talks about Jesus a lot for a spiritual book.
No,
it's
he does,
right?
For sure. But at the time, I had no idea. So I was the first Catholic ever met.
Really?
So interesting, I read my way. So, you know, it says, especially with Catholicism and the sort of depth of that history and so on, which is obviously the Jewish history as well, right? Yeah. They completely intertwined.
Yeah.
But it was, I read my way completely into that religion from somebody who was entirely, I hated religion and I hated everything about it. After The Power of Now, domino of interior introspection and understanding a spiritual reality that I'd never known before, masked it with, I guess, drinking, partying, drugs, that kind of stuff, just you do when you're 18 to 20 in London, right? I'd never understood any sort of spiritual, any sort of sense of the spiritual.
and I had a hard fast and very firm, convicted conversion to Catholicism before I even knew any Catholic. I didn't know I was the only Catholic that I knew.
That's
crazy.
So weird.
And I didn't know what a saint was. I didn't know anything. So yeah. It was an amazing, again, so for another time. But that was the start. And then now, yeah, it is the guiding principle and baseline for my entire existence. And it is the, without that, I would never, I owe everything in terms of my peace, in terms of my happiness, in terms of my understanding of reality, in terms of my detachment, in terms of virtue, everything from that. So I'm immensely grateful.
So this is exactly the point that I was saying with nutrition, which is like, be open-minded and find what works for you. So like, that's such a brilliant example. So for me, detaching from Judaism and having broad spectrum spirituality as my guiding light is what works for me. And finding Catholicism from a place of atheism is what works for you. And all that matters is that we're both showing up in the world trying to be our best selves.
Exactly.
And like, it's not one size fits all for people. But the point is like, actually trying to be the best version of yourself. And it doesn't matter what your choice is or how you get there. It's the fact that you're even trying in the first place, which quite often makes people like you and me respect each other.
Exactly.
Right? It's not about what you choose. It's the fact that you like actually are willing to choose.
Exactly. Yeah, and also that you're on a search for truth.
Correct.
Because I think so many people, and I would argue that the biggest challenge that socially we face is a lack of purpose. And ultimately, I would say now understanding things of godlessness that pervades everything. And in relation to that, how can people find any sense of direction if they have no purpose, if they have no connection to anything above themselves?
Yep.
And historically, everyone has. But we're at a time now which thinks we're above that. And the reality is that without that, what does one have other than essentially a nihilistic, self-serving mission which doesn't aspire to anything above? And it treats it by default, one is the center of everything, when in fact, we're not at all.
Don't need to worry. AI is going to be our god soon and everyone will be god-fearing. So it'll be all good.
Yeah. Last one. It's a good one.
Oh, to end on. Oh, my little dream boat. So it says, spending money is easy, but spending time is what matters. And I think this is really, really important. So like I said, when my daughter was born, I committed there and then, like, and this is specific with relation to work, by the way. I think creating experiences is really important. And I don't personally think that I have to be there 100% of the time for my daughter, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I think it's important to have downtime and be away and have your own time, all of this stuff as well. But what she's going to remember is that I was there most days, right? And what I love is, you know, I'm doing this part for me because she's two. She has no idea that I do every bath time and bedtime with her, and she'll never remember it. I don't remember when I was like, you know, anything before 5 or 6, probably. So she'll never remember it. So this is for me. But it's like building these moments of pride. I feel like, you know, it's the process of turning up and making sure that I know that being a dad is more important than work after 6 o'clock. That to me is like personal growth. So really what that represents is that I'm personally growing as a human being that can say there's something more important than work in my life. A couple of years ago, I couldn't say that. Like, most important thing in my life was work. So this is about a personal development journey, and for me showing up and being regular
the
and
discipline.
Present with my daughter and discipline.
And detachment from work, which creates a greater peace. And I'm sure, I would imagine, you found a lot of peace through after having a child. And obviously the challenges that come with that, as we were saying this before, work lightens up, I think.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, life is about priorities. Not everything can be a priority. So, you know, one of the things, for example, on your show, people building personal brand, building, like, being creators and stuff who are then going to want to try and make products. I can tell you categorically, their products will be much worse than my product. Just like my personal brand is much worse than their personal brand. Much worse. My content, much worse than theirs. Why? They're full-time creators trying to make products. I'm trying to make products, part-time creator. And the results are the results, right? Like, you
can't
know,
have it all. My mum always said to me, which is a lot of wisdom, you can have it all, but not all at once.
It's very true.
Yeah. And that always stuck with me. Because I often have a tendency in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. Everything. Yeah, I ignore that advice. Yeah, but she's still right.
Yeah.
She's still right.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. And so, like, you know, when you have a kid, you have to decide, like, is this my priority? And if it is, like, how does that show up?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've made that conscious choice. And I think in life, it's easy to say, I could do this more, I could do that more, you know, I regret, I wish I changed, et cetera, et cetera. Can honestly, hand on heart, say, I think I'm a really great dad. And I think I'm proud of myself for how I've consciously decided to be an awesome dad. And that might change. But where I'm at right now is I can honestly say I give it 100%. I show up and I do the work.
What would be your advice as a final question to your 26-year-old self as an entrepreneur? Knowing what you know now, what would you be saying to him?
Okay, great question. I think the most important starting point is if you ever want to be really successful, you have to learn how to find great people and delegate to them well. A skill everyone learns too late is like how to find and hire great people. When that's not the most important lesson you learn, sadly, you are a bottleneck, right? And you're just consistently going to be a bottleneck.
Unless you get out of the way.
Because you have so much capacity, right? And it's limited. So you have to find other people who you can instill passion and energy into. The one thing I always say, and I'm really proud of my team at Heights because they're fucking amazing at this, and I say it all the time, a really young team, mostly like, you know, Gen Z and younger millennial, like under 30. Like, you can learn skills. Like, we teach skills, we do training courses for people, we send them whatever they want to do, they can do it. Cannot train attitude. It's the one gold dust thing. Some people are born with an amazing attitude. And they're lucky. That's just their disposition. They go at stuff. They do stuff because it's what makes them proud. They go the extra mile because it makes them proud. They want to impress Jordan, their boss, because it makes them proud. Nothing to do with you. Those people are gold dust, right? Some people start off with a bad attitude, but they're open-minded and they have great managers who give them feedback and tell them, hey, you're not the shit. Hey, that wasn't very good. And this is how you can do it better. And this is what great looks like. And you're having a direct feedback relationship with someone because you really care about them. You really care that they develop. And those relationships are my favorite kinds because it's a bit like the, you know, talented sports people versus the people who work unbelievably hard. You're always going to have a little bit more appreciation for the one that works really hard because it's more relatable and good for them. Same thing here, like the people who aren't necessarily born with a great attitude, but are in a place where they're like, okay, I recognize this is a good job opportunity. I don't want to mess it up. Help me get better. And they're not great and you invest in their time and energy to tell them and they listen and those people grow so fast and it's so rewarding. So my business advice is make sure you know it's all about the people that you work with, whether you're hiring one person or 100 people. Try not to compromise on that. And as best as you can, figure out what your values are personally and how they're going to permeate inside the company and try and set up interview questions and onboarding processes and management check-ins that align with those values, because you cannot force your values on someone. That's the other thing, right? You cannot hire someone who is a religion-hating racist and change their mind, right? It's just not going to work. You might as well try and hire someone who like has their actual like similar values to you already and work with them from that place. So human values are a deeply ingrained thing. And I think this is one of the things that companies that get this right, where the culture is so right, they do really well. They understand that people come from all different backgrounds and all different ideas. But if you can pick three or four values of the things that you think are really important, like a hard work ethic is like a lazy one, but a very common one, right? If the person can demonstrate to you that they have a hard work ethic, then they're going to respect someone who has a totally different religious philosophy and outlook on life, etc., but an amazing work ethic, those two people are going to collaborate really well.
Common ground.
Yeah, they'll have their personal differences. When it comes to professional output, they're going to be like, oh, you know what? I really get so much energy from this person because I trust them. And so I think this is like something that was really, really important. Get clear on your values, get clear on what's important in your hiring processes, find those people, accept their differences, right? You're not trying to make them perfect. You're not trying to mold them into you, but then you can go really, really far. And I think that's one thing that, like, the younger you are as well, the less experience you have of knowing that to be true. And it's where I messed up in the past.
Love it. I think that's a really good place to end. Dan, okay. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's been my pleasure.
So that was Dan. And I loved talking to him. I think we could have spoken all day, to be honest, about everything and anything. And I think the big thing that I took from this, more than anything really, is about that link between looking after ourselves from a nutritional perspective and how we can excel in the world of work. He is a real life case study on that. He's somebody who struggled a lot, who found a cause and a reason to change, made those changes, and is now thriving. Thank you so much, Dan, for coming on Unbox. I hope you all loved it as much as I love talking to him. Make sure to like the video, to subscribe to the channel, and we'll see you back next Wednesday.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.